Step right up, butchers and femmes, transvestites, S&Ms, welcome to Lesbian Nation. Tonight we're going to have a short piece by Mary Flowerpot, who's going to take you on a tour of New York. And then we're going to hear from the women of GAA with a little music somewhere along the end by our favorite friend, Denny Cavello.
Yes, hello everybody. This is Mary Flowerpot again to let you in on what's really been happening around the city this week. But first of all, to the post bag. I'm concentrating my attention this week on a rather thick envelope here, as it has important and urgent written all over it. So if there's a listener in pain out there, sit down and have a cup of something hot and listen to somebody else's agony. It will make you feel a lot better. Now, where's this correspondence letter? Here we are. I'm opening it now. I'll read it to you. Dear Mary Flowerpot, we desperately need your help. Now that we are in college, my best friend Trudy and I stay overnight in each other's homes and sleep in the same bed together. Somehow we discovered that touching each other between the legs was quite enjoyable, and Trudy is very keen on play. But as I found it difficult to keep my finger there, we switched to bananas, carefully selecting for size, of course, and not too ripe. During play, she will reject the banana from time to time, which allows me to push it back with my tongue or chin, or to eat it. Needless to say, the results are fantastic before the banana is completely devoured. However, there is something not quite right with my stomach, as I get the most awful indigestion from the bananas, and this is very upsetting for me. Can you please suggest anything we might use as a substitute, as we don't want to spoil this scene? Yours sincerely, Sally Eaton and Trudy Fruity. Well, I should think not. It sounds rather marvellous, doesn't it? Let me see now. I guess cucumbers wouldn't be too good for your sensitive stomach either, Sally. In fact, I'd definitely rule out of your diet fruit and vegetables altogether. I think the best recommendation would be candy bars. Candy bars, try these. Or how about a well-shaped up piece of marzipan? That should go down a treat. Personally, I absolutely adore chocolate cream eclairs for that really exotic touch. Well, let me know how it goes on, women. Now let's get on. This week there was a real mystery afoot in the city that Mary Flowerpot had to get out there and solve. In order to do this, Mary Flowerpot had to assume the identity of poverty-stricken Patsy Flatout and make an application to go on welfare. As poverty-stricken Patsy Flatout, she appears naked in front of the Welfare Review Board in order to penetrate into the activities of City Hall big-time racketeer Dick McFlinsey and expose his arch-cohorts Franklin D. Stonefeller and Thumbs Vermicelli. Well, that is, you would have heard all that excitement, folks, if Mary Flowerpot, alias poverty-stricken Patsy Flatout, had had her application accepted by the Welfare Board. As it is, they turned her down, flat, you might say, and left her standing out in the cold. Now, we'll never know the real truth of what Stonefeller said to Vermicelli over that important luncheon table in the Oscar Lounge on the third floor of City Hall. However, you may care to pick out one of the following as being more or less suggestive of that vital outcome. Very good. Yes, we're getting better at the sounds, aren't we? Now, here's something quite nice for you to relax to. Draw up a nice chair, put down your pencil immediately, and listen.
She was a visitor. She was a visitor. She was a visitor. She was a visitor.
She was a visitor. She was a visitor. She was a visitor. She was a visitor. She was a visitor. She was a visitor.
There, that's just to show you that we've really got things under control here. Yes, yes, well, I seem to have got off the story. Now, where were we? Oh, yes. Flowerpot's first plan as poverty-stricken Patsy Flatout penetrating the inner sanctum of City Hall fails, and she's left with no alternative but to think of another one. She's thinking. Mm-hmm. I wandered lonely as a cloud o'er hill and dale. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I could come up with an idea. Desperation! I have it, of course! All I have to do is assume another identity in order to penetrate City Hall and expose that big-time racketeer Dick McFlinsey and his arch-cohorts Franklin D. Stonefeller and Thumbs Vermicelli. I know. I'll pose as senior citizen inquiring after my rights. Here I am at the City Hall steps. Now, I'll just assume my senior citizen look and ask this policeman the way to my rights. Excuse me, officer. Which way is... Mary Flowerpot fails a second time to effect an entrance to City Hall. Now she knows she's really up against it, with her back against the wall, totally demoralised, bent, broken, out of her mind from the strain. Got a good idea. I'll sell City Hall to a rich American. That way we'll be rid of the whole thing. Let me see if I can find one first off. Excuse me, are you a rich American?
Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few.
Well, yes, I suppose that's another way of putting it. Actually, I'm trying to sell City Hall, and I wondered if you'd be interested in buying it.
Some chicken, some neck.
I think he's a bit strange, don't you? I'm going to leave him alone. I think he might be dangerous. Never mind, I'll try again with this lady. Excuse me, madam. You look very elegant. Would you know a nice rich American who might like to buy City Hall for you to live in? Strong views on that. Whew. I think I'll just pop into this tea shop and have a nice strong cuppa. What's this? Grand Central Station? Bless me. Oh no, it's the inside of City Hall after all. Well, wasn't that difficult, was it? I'll just take a careful look round. Good God, folks, just take a look at this. They're manufacturing fake welfare clients from bureaucratic waste paper. So that's their little game, is it? I'll have to put a stop to this. Pass that pencil immediately, and I'll cancel them out as they come off the machine. Oh, I'll never do it. This calls for drastic action. Okay, you guys, reach for the sky, or I'll fill you full of lead from my pea shooter, carefully disguised as a penny whistle. They don't seem to have heard me. Or if they did, they didn't understand. Maybe I haven't got the jargon straight. I don't think I'll bother to explain anyway. I'll just throw a spanner in the works. Okay, this is it, boys. Well, that settled their hash. I think I'll get out of here before the going gets rough. Folks, if you pass City Hall tomorrow and it isn't standing there, don't worry about it. But if you are the worrying kind, write to me about it. That's Mary Flowerpot, WBAI. And I'll listen to you sympathetically and say something soothing to set your mind at rest. How about this? A little Tahitian ditty, Tiara Hinano, Flower of Hinano.
The sound you have just heard was Judy Liebler chewing her Fritos. We are now going to have an interview with the women of the Lesbian Liberation Committee of GAA. I was wondering how the Lesbian Liberation Committee got started in New York City.
It started about a year ago, I think. It grew out of the Community Relations Committee, and it was our effort to relate GAA more to women in the city. First, it was a subcommittee of community relations to see if we could actually get some kind of effort going that would have any kind of relevance to the lesbian community, and as it developed, which it did by leaps and bounds, it became a full committee, which it's been for quite a while, and sponsoring events at least once a week for women since, I guess, last fall.
How many women are in the committee?
Well, it's hard to tell. Because it varies from week to week. I think we have a core group of at least 20 people that come, week after week after week. And our meetings, they usually have about 30 to 35 people. And the number of people that relate to the committee, it's hard to tell. I'd say 50 to about 55, 60 people.
One thing I didn't get is all your names. I mean, never having met you all before.
My name's Jean O'Leary.
Nath Rockhill.
Ginny.
And mine's Martha Mitchell. Let's see, I was involved with GLF, which was more or less a predecessor of GAA in the various ups and downs that have occurred in the homophile movement and gay liberation movements in the city. And then a bunch of us who were in GLF, a bunch of the women, split off into Lesbian Liberation, or Radical Lesbians, really, it was called. I was wondering, since we got into a separatist thing, and since I personally am into a working separately, how you all feel about that? I know there's a lot of tensions about that in the gay movement in the city and in the women's movement.
One of my greatest interests is the civil rights issue, and for that reason, it's been very important to me to be involved in GAA, because we're all working on getting just basic civil rights, which affect women and men in exactly the same kind, in the same laws affect women and men, perhaps not in the same kinds of ways. We saw, when we first started Lesbian Liberation in GAA, the fragmentation of the movement and the way the women and men had split in GLF, and how radical lesbians had seemed to be foundering, and DOB was doing its particular thing. And one of the things we had in mind was to offer an alternative. And we were very careful to make sure that what we did was an alternative, to sponsor events on Sundays while DOB was giving dances on Saturdays, so that women had more than one thing in a week to do. Because one of the disasters in the city has been that gay women really haven't had any way to get in touch with their community, with our community. aside from a couple of really rotten bars up till this year, there really was no place besides DOB dances and one or two other things in a year. And we wanted to help alleviate that situation.
Well, the reason I first joined the committee was just being put in touch with a few women who I thought were really together women, and I enjoyed working with them very much. And I knew that when we worked on a project or when we worked on anything, there was going to be a follow-through and it was going to work, it was going to go. And the way I see things now, there's a definite separatist movement here in the city, which I'm all for, and I'm also involved in that. A percentage of my time, I'm basically involved in GAA, and I choose to work in this organization because I like to see things happening that I know are going to happen where women can get together.
Yeah, I feel very comfortable about working in GAA, and my experience in working with the men there has been basically very positive. I went out on a number of speaking engagements with men last year. I feel that we're working for the same cause, which is gay civil rights. Now, many of the women in Lesbian Liberation and the committee are not actively working with men. They're really isolated in the committee work, and they can choose to relate that way if they want to. But a number of women are becoming more involved in the civil rights struggle and working more actively with the men in the organization. I think that's good, too.
Do you feel, in working with the men, that there is any difficulty or discrimination or any form of sexism?
Well, definitely there is the sexism. There's no denying it, and we don't want to deny it. I think that we've dealt with it in different ways and different times. Right now we're dealing with it head on. Our tactics are always such that we always get what we want as women in the organization. I think that one of the main things we do in working with men is just being ourselves. There's a whole thing about, you know, do you stick around to educate men, or why do we bother working with men in the first place? And I know that we don't spend any time educating men, per se. We just are ourselves and very strong lesbians working within this organization, and men are beginning to catch on to the fact that they're not going to get away with the sexism anymore.
Yeah, I have encountered some sexism on the speaking panels, and I've brought this to the attention of the men, and it's raised their consciousness, and by and large, they've been glad to have their consciousness raised. It occurred in the form of, well, they're taking a bit too more of than their share of the speaking time. It also occurred just on the part of the audience of having to direct the questions to the men on the panel rather than the women on the panel. And sometimes the women just had to jump in to get anything said at all.
When you say you're meeting the sexism head on, what do you mean? I mean, how do you make sure that you get your way? What sort of techniques do you use?
Well, I don't want to blow it here on the air, but yeah, no, I mean, as far as specific tactics, I just said that it's something that comes from inside. You just know what to do. When I mentioned meeting it head on, I was thinking specifically of an issue that we brought to the floor using the regular organizational tactics of bringing a motion to the floor, and we had a motion for a separatist meeting, which was a feminist Sunday, which we had about a month ago, where we would have, no men would be allowed in. Now, we usually don't have very much trouble with men coming in anyway. They know enough to stay away. But we wanted to make a point of absolutely no men being there on that Sunday, so we brought the motion to the floor.
Regular listeners to this program know, last week there was some discussion about the case of Emily Goodman, and accusations were made that GAA was being sexist in not paying her what she said was her due, which was fees for her handling the Michael May and related cases. I was wondering if you'd care to comment on that, anyone?
Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't hear the show. I think there's been a lot of sexism in relation to Emily Goodman, a good deal of it sort of reverse sexism. A number of people wanting so much to have a woman represent us that they have treated her as a woman lawyer rather than as a lawyer.
Could you clarify that? I mean, what's the difference between treating her as a woman lawyer rather than a lawyer? How have you seen that taking place?
This kind of reverse sexism takes place a lot, I think. currently in GAA, where people, who are mostly men, feel that merely being a woman, simply being a woman, gives you, you know, 10 points. I think we've seen this in elections occasionally, where GAA as a whole wanted a woman. And I think that when I ran for vice president, I was aware that simply being female was a great advantage. I think a lot of people have been very eager that we have a woman lawyer. And I think that it's as sexist to be, you know, inclined positively in favor of someone because she's a woman as negatively against somebody because she's a woman. The current situation, I think, has been involved with oral versus written agreements, and I don't see an element of sexism in the discussion. There's been some bad communication among a number of people, and we're in the process of working out some kind of rightful solution.
Well, let me ask specifically. Emily claims that money is owed her and is not being paid to her, or people are demanding that they renegotiate what she considers an already negotiated agreement on the amount of money due her. And she feels that people wouldn't do that to her if she were a male lawyer. What do you think?
No. Unfortunately, there was really some botched up communications, apparently. And it's not because she's a woman, it's because there were botched up communications. We, as a volunteer organization, have lots of rough edges, unlike any other group. And this is one of the places where we've had a problem. Not because she's a woman, we've had problems with men, too.
The committee doesn't have an official position on this yet. They've just begun to get involved in it. Emily brought her case down to us at our meeting last night, and we heard her side of it. We have not heard directly from the people who told her, you're not going to be paid the amount that you requested. We haven't heard directly from them, and I think that's the reason the committee didn't just make give an unqualified support of her at that time. What the committee decided to do was to involve themselves in the decision, to send a delegation from Lesbian Liberation to the legal committee and work it out together so that women would be involved in the decision.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is it's a lot of internal hassles, but a basic thing that we always work with is facts, and we don't jump to snap decisions. And I think that this is why we've kept functioning as well as we have in the past. And to jump at the word sexism just because there's a woman there who we feel is being mistreated or being oppressed is, you know, your first inclination is to want to do it, but we have to back up a couple of steps, and really there's an issue to deal with. We have to get the other side of the story.
Last night I was present, and you were asking Emily more or less to back up a case, that you would take a case to the legal committee, and the feeling I got was almost as though everybody had to, you know, prepare a legal brief to go to the legal committee to prove that the money was due to Emily.
Well, if anyone who's done work for you comes and says, you know, flatly, you owe me money, and you're not aware of it, the first thing I assume that you would do in any case with any kind of person with any work would be to ask what the work was and how much was owed. Why? That's what the committee needed to know. And that's the question that's pending.
It seems to me, though, that, I mean, it's obvious Emily was there in court. I don't know if any of you were there. The Michael May case was written up all over the place, and it was widely known who else was charged. What is it you want, a detailed breakdown?
When we talk to the legal committee, there are undoubtedly going to be some points raised that we will probably not be able to answer, and if Emily were there herself, she could answer them. She could provide the additional information. I mean, we just didn't have the resources. We didn't have the preparation. She didn't let us know she was coming. We didn't have the time to even research this thing, and our committee is not generally, well, it really, our area is not legal matters. That's what the legal committee is there for. So we're really in need of information, which she could provide us.
I do want to add, though, that if we would have had the time to research this, we would have done it and taken an interest in it. But the way it was handled was a big surprise to us, and we're not into, again, snap decisions and zaps without knowing where it's coming from. I think those are fine, but they're for other people to do. And we tend to want to remain a stable force and think things through before we do them. I feel so misunderstood. I think that a lot of the flack that we get is totally unfair as far as being GAA women, because, like, I know in several instances, and especially one in particular, where a woman came to the firehouse and was confronted with a man that said, "Listen, we're so glad to have women around the firehouse now because they can make coffee better than the men, and, you know, they make this a very homey place to be in." And she left with very rotten feelings that this whole organization was very sexist, and went back and told all the other women about it. And it took a lot of explaining and everything else in order to iron out this fact. I had a confrontation with that man, and he's no longer functioning in the position that he was functioning in. It's just, people run into this and then they blow it up, and it becomes an established GAA policy that GAA is so sexist.
Well, actually, I sometimes have that same trouble at a certain radio station.
When I meet a man who's sexist and he does something I don't like, I just tell him he should fuck off. I enjoy being a dyke. I won't dress up cute and frilly in some clothing that I don't like. I strut in my jeans and stompers. I enjoy being a dyke. I'm fully a lesberated woman. I work for the revolution now. I struggle and I cuddle with my sisters, and I don't need a man to show me how. I've always been an uppity woman. I refuse to run, I stand and strike. I've never taken shit from any man. I enjoy being a dyke. I'm a woman, identified woman. I won't accept boundaries I don't like. I'm gay and I'm proud and I'm angry. I enjoy being a dyke.
What's going to happen, let's see, this is Friday night. What's happening this Sunday?
Well, this Friday, first of all, we're having a dance starting at 9 o'clock. And this Sunday we're having a panel called Coming Out and Staying Out, which is different from our usual coming out panels because it's going to have a whole different track. Once you're out, then what do you do? How do you stay out? And this is how it relates to the movement and personal interest as well.
Do you think you can crawl back into the woodwork?
This is Lesbian Nation. Good night. See you next week.
That was an interview with Jean O'Leary, Ginny, and Nath Rockhill of GAA. Earlier parts of the program were produced with the technical assistance of Peter Zanger. This is Lesbian Nation. Good night.